The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by six local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Camilla Way. Her novel, Watching Edie, has just come out. She joins us by telephone from London, England. Hello, Camilla.
Hello, Vic.
Wow, Camilla, this is really a creepy novel. How'd you get the idea for this?
Well, the idea actually came from reading a news story about a case of teenage bullying, which had horrific consequences, so that sparked the idea. And I was always interested in the idea of that toxic female friendships. So I thought that would be a good subject for a book. So
toxic,
kind of went from there.
Toxic female friendships? What are those? I'm not familiar with them.
Well, I guess it's the sort of the she-wolf in sheep's clothing, the idea of, you know, this sort of single white female kind of character. I think female friendships are really important to women. We tend to trust them and tell them all our secrets. So the idea of that being subverted into something dangerous is quite scary. So it's the whole idea of somebody not being who they seem.
I like the way you set this up, because we go back and forth through time from the viewpoints of these two different women. Tell us how you've structured it, and who are these women? Tell us about them.
Well, it's the story of Heather and Edie and the dark secret that ended their teenage friendship. And then years later, Heather turns up on Edie's doorstep, and it becomes clear that their past is going to catch up on them. So I wanted to do it from both women's, girls' perspective, Heather from the past and Edie in the present, because I was interested in the whole theme of guilt and culpability and whether we change from the people we once were, you know, that our past sins can stay with us, or whether we can, you know, ever be forgiven. So I had the idea of doing it from two time frames and two different perspectives.
The book is Watching Edie. Camilla Way wrote it. She joins us on the program today. Edie is very different from Heather. This seems like an unlikely friendship, but Edie is very beautiful as a young woman. Heather is kind of on the plain side, and yet there's some kind of a connection there. There's some sort of an attraction, which we see through the eyes of Heather, because she's the one back in the past talking about what happened. Tell us about this, about the connection between them. How did they meet?
They met when Edie moves to Heather's hometown of Frampton when they're 16 years old. And Edie is quite lonely. She doesn't know anybody there. And she just by chance meets Heather on the first day of school. And they strike up a friendship. And they are very, very different girls. But they what they have in common, they're quite lonely and quite vulnerable for very different reasons. So, and they both take different things from the friendship, I think. Heather is completely infatuated with Edie, because she's just so great and so cool and artistic and beautiful, everything that she feels she isn't. Whereas Edie perhaps is a little more self-serving and enjoys the way she appears, you know, through Heather's eyes, I guess. But their friendship's genuine, I think, but there are lots of different shades of grey. It's ever-shifting, I think, throughout the book.
Well, they seem to have one thing in common, in that their relationships with their parents seem to be kind of troubled.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both quite alone in that sense. But I like writing about adolescence, because I think it's a time in our life where everything is unpredictable and we can strike up friendships with totally different people. And when we're, you know, older, our lives are so predictable and we tend to move in the same parameters and, you know, make friends with people just like us, whereas it's anything can happen at that age. We've got more freedom in a lot of ways.
When I think back to those years, I think of teens kind of hanging in groups and cliques. I'm sure it's that way in the UK, right? That you've got the overachievers, you've got the jocks, you've got the hippies, you've got the, I don't know what the groups would have been for you, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. But I think, I mean, it's definitely the case over here as well. I think that's a perennial thing throughout, you know, teenagers. But I guess what unites everybody are the same human troubles of wanting to fit in and loneliness. And Edie very soon becomes obsessed with the local bad boy. So, you know, and a lot of the story is about her being carried away down that on that tide of into the self-destructive world, which she hasn't really got the maturity and wherewithal to deal with. And Heather, I guess, wants to help save her from that.
And this intervention by Heather, this intercession to try to save Edie from the bad boy, also derails Heather's ambitions, because Heather, her parents expect her to do great things. They expect her to be what, a doctor?
That's right, yeah.
And it kind of throws Heather off track, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Heather has her own very troubled past because of an awful tragedy from her childhood when her younger sister died, and that has a huge effect on the family and the dynamics between Heather and her parents. So they have this huge, you know, burden on her, and also these expectations where she has to be seen to be doing the right thing and following the line that they've set out for her. But there's also a side of Heather, I think, that wants to break free. She's got a pretty hefty shoplifting habit. and, you know, she's drawn to the wildness of Edie. So like all teenagers, I guess, she wants to break free. But, you know, the events, you know, spiral out of control. She gets carried away with it. So nothing really stays as it should have done.
Camilla Way joins us. Her novel is Watching Edie. I actually had forgotten about the shoplifting thing. You're right. They have a scene in there where Edie likes to wear makeup and dress up, and she's trying to encourage Heather to do the same to, you know, be more attractive to the bad boys. And I think, if I recall correctly, Edie goes over to Heather's place and is shocked to discover that Heather has this massive collection of makeup that she's swiped.
That's right. Yeah. So it's just a little side of Heather's personality, I guess. And she describes how she never wants to wear any once she's tucked it up her sleeve in the pharmacy. But she loves that feeling of danger, of knowing how horrendous the consequences would be from her very strict religious parents if she was caught.
You create these really creepy scenes that stay with the reader, and one of them you just alluded to, and that is when Heather's sister died. And just the way you draw that up, the way it happens, and Heather's viewpoint of it, it's all very mysterious. We really don't know what happened, do we?
No, and I really, you know, I was interested in having that unreliable narrator, and the reader never really knowing, you know, until the end, of, you know, what actually went on and who's at fault. And so I think, yeah, the case of Heather's sister, I wanted to add to that, basically. I think there's a part in the book where Edie says, oh, you never can tell about people, can you? Because they find out that Heather's very strict religious mother has been having an affair. And I wanted that to be the sort of overriding theme of the book, that you can't tell about people. So your expectations or the conclusions you've drawn about people can often be completely wrong.
And Heather isn't the only unreliable narrator here, is she? You've got two of them.
Yeah, both. Both women are pretty unreliable. I've always loved books with unreliable narrators. So, and I wanted to play around with the readers' emotions as they went through the book, you know, them swapping their allegiances between the two characters, sometimes rooting for Heather and sometimes rooting for Edie, and trying to continuously shift the ground and you know, play with people's ideas of who exactly was guilty and why.
I really enjoy these unreliable narrators, but I'm starting to wonder what it is with you women in the United Kingdom, you novelists. We had Paula Hawkins on with The Girl on the Train. We had Fiona Barton on with The Widow. Here you are. You're double-teaming us with your unreliable narrator. So what's the deal with this particular form?
When's it going to end? I don't know. I've always loved it. Have you read The Wasp Factory by Ian Banks? It's a very dark novel by a Scottish writer.
I have not.
Read when I was 13 years old, and I think it had a big effect on me because he's got the mother of all unreliable narrators in that book. I think it made a lasting impression. But, you know, I guess it's just an added way of pulling the wool out from underneath the reader. Yeah, he's fantastic.
So the unreliable narrator thing has been going on for a while, and you've got these other things in here. You referred to the toxic female friendships. Let's talk a little bit about the bad boy thing, because I know that's another big issue. Her attraction, Edie's attraction to the bad boy, that they know that the bad boy is not going to be good for them, but she's just so blind to it.
Yeah, I guess that's quite a common experience with young women, maybe. And I hint quite a lot about Edie's childhood and how her father ran off and had lots of affairs, so maybe that has some hand in it. But I just wanted to get across that feeling of total infatuation that young girls, young women can have, and how it is utterly all-engrossing and all-encompassing. And it's, you know, can be a form of madness at that age, I think. Yeah, I personally didn't write too much about Connor because I wanted it very much to be about Heather and Edie and the power play between the two girls rather than Connor, sort of almost have him as a background figure. But I think probably a lot of women have had that experience at some point in their life.
Well, I used to be a bad boy. No, I'm just kidding.
Did you?
Hardly. My guess is Camilla Way. The book is Watching Edie. It's got a wonderful cover.
And yeah, it's great, isn't it?
After you read the book,
eerie.
Obviously this is Edie, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. But you could think it was Heather.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's it's good because it's quite ambiguous, isn't it, like the book?
Yeah, we don't know. I don't want to do any spoilers here, but can we talk about the fact that when Heather resurfaces in Edie's life, that Edie is expecting? Can we talk about the baby? Because this is such a big part of the story. That's how you build the tension with the baby.
Yeah. Well, I had the idea for the book while I was pregnant with twins. And I, both my mother and my grandmother had postnatal depression when they had their first child. So when I was pregnant, I was thinking, God, you know, I hope I don't get it. But also, I've got quite a big support network. I have, friends and family close by. And then I thought, you know, what if you did? What if you did have a baby and you had no support network, no friends, no family nearby, and you did become, you know, very depressed? It would be the ideal time for somebody to sort of swoop down on you the way Heather does. She totally takes advantage of Edie being completely polaxed by this horrendous depression. And basically takes over the baby and kind of assumes the role of doing everything and, you know, being practical and, you know, bringing Edie's lunch to her, food to her while she lies motionless in bed, remembering about this horrendous thing that happened in the past. So, and then when Edie does finally come round from it, she realizes that Heather has got her claws in quite deeply, and it's very hard to shake her off.
You do a lovely job of making us feel all this sympathy for Edie. We really are worried about her.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to do that. I wanted to paint both characters. You know, show that there's light and shade to everybody. Nobody's completely horrendous and nobody's completely good. We've all done things that we're not proud of, probably not quite to the extent of what happened in the book, but, you know, it's, you know, again, I wanted to play around with people's feelings towards, I wanted people to feel sympathetic to both characters and wonder about whether they can be forgiven and, you know, vindicated.
The book is Watching Edie. Camilla Way joins us on the program today. And we're speaking to her in the London area. What part of London? I know that's a big area. Where are you at, actually?
I'm in southeast London, in Greenwich.
Okay. Did you set any of this book in places that were familiar to you? I don't know these places that you're talking about in the story.
Yeah, I did, actually. There's an area very close to me called Telegraph Hill where it's got spectacular panoramic views of London. But it's quite, until recently, it's always been quite a poor area. It's now becoming slowly more and more gentrified. But it's a great mixture of quite poor people and affluent people, so it's an interesting area. But at the top of it is this spectacular view, so I thought that would be quite a nice place to set the novel.
And that's where Edie has the apartment upstairs, where she has this wonderful view.
Yeah, but she's in this very claustrophobic, tiny, tiny little apartment. So she's quite isolated and quite separate, even though she's got this huge, you know, thriving city all around her. And when Heather moves in, it becomes even more claustrophobic because the two of them are living in this tiny, tiny little space with a baby.
So
I quite like the idea of the contrast between these amazing views and this awful, stuffy little apartment.
Edie has the baby, and her one family connection, her one support network is an uncle. She doesn't really speak to her mother. Her uncle is still involved in her life. And after the baby is born, you show us the dynamic between Heather, Edie, and the baby. And the uncle is kind of excluded. This makes us very concerned as readers. We think there's something very ominous going on here. I don't want to spoil this. What can you say about this?
Well, I think her Uncle Jeff is a kind of beacon of hope amongst the darkness to begin with, because he's just this lovely guy who obviously cares very much about his niece. And, yeah, you're right, she ran away from her hometown in the West Midlands when this awful event happened at age 16. And her mother found out about it. She told her mother about it, and mother washed her hands off her, was just too horrified to continue the relationship. They had a troubled relationship to begin with anyway. So she ran away to London and moved in with him. And so he's always been the big, you know, steady, comforting presence in her life. But when she, you know, succumbs to postpartum depression and Heather looks after her, she can't cope with keeping up the relationship, and gradually she stops answering his calls or replying to his text messages. And unbeknownst to her, Heather is quietly working away behind the scenes to discourage him as well, deleting all his texts. She takes over Edie's mobile cell phone and deletes all his texts, so he gives up in the end. So I thought that was quite a nice creepy angle to put in.
Very creepy. Did you just describe the uncle as the beacon of hope?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, okay. In Edie's quite solitary life. I mean, as we find out, there's a good reason why she's become so isolated and doesn't really mix with other people. So I guess he was her only connection to the real world and to normality.
But Edie really does want to have a friend. Maybe that friend isn't Heather, who just kind of plops herself down in the middle of her life and kind of takes it over. The woman downstairs, Edie wants to get to know her, and this is very difficult. There's a woman who's moved in downstairs who has a couple of young sons, and Edie keeps seeing her and wanting to connect with her, and this woman keeps closing the door. But she's I think she's one of the most important characters in the story, this neighbor.
Yeah, I think, there is a part of the Edie is trying to reach out and make a friendship. And then she says at some point that she hasn't had a friendship since Heather, when they were 16, and that obviously ended very badly. But she's kind of shied away from friendships. because she knows where they can lead. But there's something about Monica, the neighbor downstairs, that appeals to her and that she warms to, and eventually they do become friends. But of course, Monica has her own past and her own demons and her own secrets. So, but for a long time in the book, they're quite a comfort to each other, and they, you know, they share their experiences. But Monica only knows one side of Edie, which is a side of Edie that she chooses to tell, and she only knows one side of Heather, which you know, she just surmises from what she's seen of her, but she doesn't know the whole truth either. So when she finds out at the end, her opinion, like the reader's opinion, is completely turned around.
Yes.
It's quite a bleak book, really, isn't it?
This is, well, yeah. And you use water as a metaphor for danger. We have the scene with Heather and her little sister, and then we have the place where the kids in this town like to hang out. It's an abandoned quarry that's filled with water, and they keep going back there. And every time they go back there, we say, oh, no, oh, no, what's going to happen now? And the water is just this dark, dangerous, we don't know what's under the surface, scary thing in mm-hmm. your story. You really create a sense of dread every time they go there.
Yeah, oh, good. Yeah, I guess it's a metaphor for, you know, what lurks beneath the surface. You know, that we often only see the surface of other people. We have no idea what's actually going on beneath. But you're right, there are a lot of scenes, as you know, as you said, with Heather's sister, where water is genuinely dangerous. So, yeah, I wanted to carry that on as a theme.
Well, I love the way you throw these twists in at the end. And I'm wondering, as you came up with the idea for the story, what came first, the twists or the story?
Good question. Well, I can't remember quite. I think the twist, actually. Uh-huh. I had the end, well, the scene very near to the end on the rooftop. That came to me first. And without giving too much away, but there's a decision that Edie has to make at one point where she has to sacrifice herself or save herself. And that came first as an interesting scene, and I kind of built it around that. The actual twist came from the horrendous news story I read. So,
oh, really?
So, yeah, it all kind of grew organically from there.
That's right. Your background is in journalism. Tell us about that. And what was this news story?
Well, I can't really say too much about it because it would totally give away the...
Oh, okay, okay. That's fine.
It was about teenage bullying.
Okay.
And it was quite horrific because it was between two girls and it was, you know, this horrendous betrayal. So that sparked the idea. But, I used to work in magazines, but I was more behind the scenes as an editor rather than a, you know, investigative journalist or too much on the writing side. I was almost always more drawn to fiction rather than, you know, reportage.
Mm. Okay, so you just mentioned that you were more of an editor. Now, when it comes to your novels, I know you've written more than just this one. Does it really help you to have the perfect editor working with you on the book?
Yeah, I'm also quite, because of, you know, my experience, I'm quite hard on myself as well. So I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I can't kind of move on until to the next page or the next chapter until that's as clean as it can possibly be. But, yeah, a good editor is hugely important. And luckily I have a great editor with Berkeley. So it worked really well. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of the writers, I'm sure you know, is that a lot of the writing is in the rewriting. When I write, I try and just throw the words down as quickly as possible and then spend my time rewriting and honing it and, you know, going back over it and over it until it's perfect.
Let it flow out and then polish, polish, polish.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's sort of two kinds of writers. There's the kind that sort of builds it up very, you know, minutely, piecemeal and, you know, bit by bit. Or there's the sort of writer who does, you know, like I said, just fling loads of words and then cut back and cut back and cut back.
The book is Watching Edie. Camilla Way joins us. Do you read in the genre then? Do you read other stuff?
I do. Yeah, I've always loved thrillers, but when I'm actually writing, I try not to. I try to read widely from you know, lots of different genres. It's more, I don't know why, it's more inspiring. I quite like, if I get stuck, you know, writer's block, I quite like reading poetry. Not that I read a lot of poetry at other times, but for some reason it kind of loosens up the cogs in my brain when I'm trying to write.
Is that
inspiring?
Modern poetry or classics?
Yeah, all sorts of things. I like T.S. Eliot and Philip Larkin. Mine's gone blank, but mm-hmm. lots of different sorts of poets, yeah. But I like, yeah, all kinds of genres. I think it's better to read around rather than, you know, why restrict yourself? You know, there's so much great writing out there.
I have not read your other work. I know you've written at least a couple of other novels. Tell us yeah. about your previous endeavors.
Well, Watching ED is my first real suspense, psychological suspense novel, my first real thriller, and the other two are, I guess, more general fiction. The first one was The Dead of Summer, and the second was Little Bird. And I guess I've got quite dark subject matters. The first one set in Southeast London, and is about a child who kills another child. And the second one's about a feral child and how she reintegrates into society and her life afterwards.
A feral child?
Yeah, a child that's been kidnapped and been raised, you know, without, away from society, I guess. There have been quite a few cases over the years throughout history, which I found quite fascinating. And her way of, you know, of acquiring language and becoming civilized and that sort of thing.
You mentioned that there was a real news story that gave you some of the idea for the story. Do these usually come from real things that happened, your inspirations?
I guess so. The first one just came from a conversation with my brother, and he was talking about how under our part of London there are lots of sand mines and caves, which used to be used in the war as sort of refuge shelters. And my first thought was, God, that'd be a great place to hide a body, which probably points to my predilection for crime writing. So it came from there. And I think the second one, I think, was probably from watching a documentary about feral children. So, yeah, they can come from everywhere, just from, you know, news stories is always a good source, or random conversations, just anything. I guess I start with a mood and a place. A sense of place is really important to me. Especially London. With my first book, it was very much a part of the book.
Well, I just love that you just said you see some place and you say that would be a great place to hide a body, because that's the second time I've had a writer say that. And many years ago, I had Robert Craze on the show.
He
writes about Los Angeles. I've had him on a number of times. But during an interview, he said, yeah, I drive around Los Angeles and I'll see a spot and I'll go, what a great place to hide a body. It's like,
yeah,
that, you're the real deal talking like that. I mean, if that's what you're thinking about.
Yeah, it's probably not particularly healthy, but there we go.
Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you about your new novel.
Well, likewise. Thanks very much for having me on your show.
My guest has been Camilla Way, and her page turner with a big twist or two at the end is Watching Edie. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.